Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us for SPIRIT, the Stimulating Program Initiative for Retirees that Inspires Thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Director of Community Programs for the Orthodox Union, and it's my honor to coordinate and host this program. The OU created SPIRIT several years ago, first as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it in a virtual setting for baby boomers, active retirees, not yet retirees, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents, and seniors, all of whom are looking for opportunities for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Since everyone still continues to shelter in because of the pandemic, SPIRIT has become the perfect way for all of us to engage in an online setting. Today, we are happy to welcome Mimi Jankiewicz, Executive Director of the OU's Teach Florida program, which has organized the Jewish community into a strong voting bloc and a strong voice for our community. Mimi's going to discuss with us something that I think we all are quite aware of, the importance of voting, and particularly the importance this year of making sure that we cast our vote. I'm so happy to welcome Mimi and to welcome her to the SPIRIT Forum. I'm going to turn it over to her now. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Judy. Thank you everyone for joining us today. It's a pleasure to speak with a group of people who remember what hanging chads are. You know, and speaking to younger audiences, they have no idea. So we all know here in Florida where I live, your vote counts. In 2000, there were 537 votes out of 6 million votes in Florida, and that was the entire presidential election. So thank God we're past hanging chads now, but we all know the importance of your vote. The OU, I want to preface a couple of things. The Orthodox Union is bipartisan when it comes to voting. We can focus on getting out the vote and making sure that the Jewish community gets out to vote, but we are non-political, bipartisan, nonpartisan, completely. But as supporters of government funding for our schools, which is the focus of the Teach Coalition, we can definitely talk about those as issues, but not along the lines of candidates. So our strategy, which I'll be sharing with you today, along with just general information about your vote, will become apparent, but I wanted to just really make that very clear that the OU is a nonpartisan and all of our efforts around voting are nonpartisan. So along with the hanging chads, I want to share with you just a couple important stories so you know how much even one vote can make the difference, or a couple votes. In 2018, here in Florida, there was a state legislator race where a man named Mike Caruso, who is pro-school choice, and also not Jewish himself, but married to a Jewish woman, Tracy, his wife, and is a very strong advocate against anti-Semitism. He was in a race with someone who was not as strong in these areas. He approached the Jewish community. There was only one shul in his part of Boca and Palm Beach. He approached that shul. We worked with them to get out the vote, and they voted strongly. It was a small shul, probably about 100 members. Representative Caruso won that election by 35 votes. So I'd like to think that our people getting out to vote for someone who supported our issues had a role in that. I don't know who anyone voted for, but he has gone on to champion with one of the only Jewish legislators in Florida, Randy Fine. They've gone on to create two very strongly worded acts about what is anti-Semitism and creating consequences in our university and school systems if there's anti-Semitic actions. So it was a big victory for the Jewish people. This last year, Steve Miner, an Orthodox lawyer, great young man, lives in Miami Beach, decided to run for Miami Beach City Council. So you all think of Miami Beach and you're like, Jews, but you know what? Miami Beach is a really big area. I had no idea until I really looked into it. But you know, the Jewish community is up and down Alton Road and 41st Street, if you're familiar with it. But there's many people, a broad variety of working class and all kinds of people living in Miami Beach. So Steve was definitely not issue, and he had to work hard. And while you would find signs all over the Jewish community for Steve Miner, there were plenty of other candidates that were very popular in their own areas. Steve ran against a very big developer who had a huge budget, unlike Steve. When it came down, their primary, they were only two votes apart when the final count was done in the primary. However, there were several mail-in ballots that had been disputed because there was a signature discrepancy. Some of these people were from our community. We reached out to all the people with that problem in our community. Some of them went in to correct it, and at least three of them went in to correct it because Steve ended up winning the election by one vote. So it was a very important notice that you realize that your vote can really make a difference. From that, let me just tell you the consequences of that, which are fantastic for the Jewish community and for all working people. The city of Miami Beach, seeing that the impact and the power of the Jewish voting bloc in Miami Beach, decided to approach us and say, hey, what would be good? What would be helpful that our city could do for you? And in the end, they passed a early, it's for pre-K funding that they're starting with a pilot group of 1,500 families. They will give $2,000 each per kid for them to have pre-K, to fund their pre-K learning, which is a fantastic, fantastic thing. The first time a city has done that here in Florida. You have that in New York City. We have a statewide BPK program. But for those families who apply and are lucky enough to get this pilot funding, they're going to go from the state funding of about $2,000 a year to now having $4,000 a year to help pay for their child's tuition, which helps our working families, Jewish or not Jewish, tremendously to afford quality pre-K for their kids, especially if they're working parents. Finally, I want to give you one last story. Also in 2018, in Alaska, there was, it doesn't matter if it was Republican or Democrat, it just boiled down to one final race where the majority in the House was going to go one way or the other, depending upon how that one election turned out. They were separated by one vote. They had a recount. They were still separated by one vote. It happened to be the Republican who won. And now there is a Republican legislator in Alaska. Could have gone Democrat, but it all boiled down to that one vote. So we don't know if that was your vote, my vote, whose vote it was in any of these cases. But the fact of the matter is our votes count and have a tremendous impact. But it's not just because it determines who wins. It's once that we have created a voting bloc that elected officials listen to us. Okay, so I was really curious. I thought, like the voting bloc, okay, we have organized about 12,000 voters here, which is pretty strong, but I didn't know if that was a really meaningful number. So I asked an elected official, how many people is a meaningful number to have a good voting bloc? And he said 500 people. So in which case, we're in good shape down here. This has helped us to develop relationships and clout to get things done. Let me just give you example from this summer. Because we now have a reputation and we also have built some strong relationships with elected officials, when the pandemic hit, if you recall, you started reading about free lunch programs by the public schools across the country. There was programs that were giving out free lunch. It was called Grab and Go. Families could come by and pick it up. Well, that's great, and that we are thrilled that people got fed, but none of that food was kosher. So we approached in New York, and I approached down here in Florida, the Department of Agriculture and the head of the Department of Emergency Management. I know both the directors and their staffs. We were able to reach out to them. And this summer in Florida, we were able to give out 300,000 meals to about 5,000. So a total of 5,000 kids a week were getting fed. It was a phenomenal program. I just want you to know, no one ever talked to us about meals because that's not what we did. We focused on getting government funding to the schools, but these were our students. And now, because of the pandemic, I get other phone calls, which are like, now that these meals have ended, how am I going to feed my family? Thank God we have active kosher food banks, but it's a much bigger issue than I think any of us had originally realized, the depth of the coronavirus impact. Across the country and the teach states in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, we gave out 2 million kosher meals. We were behind the programs to get those done. So it's a phenomenal, phenomenal program. And that's because of the getting out the vote, having a voting block, and developing great relationships. Across the board, this is happening with, we have Jewish school security funding in from many states. We have STEM funding in New York and New Jersey. We have nursing, transportation, and here in Florida and Pennsylvania, we have two very strong scholarship programs for our students. About 30, I might have mentioned this, but 33% of our students here in Florida are on scholarship programs from the state that give them $7,000 to attend, help supplement to, you know, be part of their tuition payment. So it's a phenomenal program. I just want to bring out one other thing that happened. And in states where you have a lot of Jewish people like New York or New Jersey, it may not be an issue, but here in Florida, we had a candidate, well, he's a representative who's been a champion for us. And believe it or not, he does not live in South Florida, he lives in Middle Florida. And the woman running against him was starting to do a lot of anti-Semitic campaigning, from like putting his photo, a picture of his head on top of a bug and saying things about people being bugs. Just, she had anti-Semitism on her, people sending anti-Semitic comments, and she said, I'm not gonna block them, people have the right to free speech. And it was really wearing on him, and it was really tough. But because we had a very strong relationship with him and he needed help, and there's really no Jews in his community and or in his district, he reached out to us and said, I need help. And I don't know what to do. I've never faced this. I don't know what, and I need your help and support. And because we had this strong relationship with him, we were able to do that. So that's just one more example of how we are having an impact. And not to mention just the hundreds of times that, because we are a voting bloc, we are getting in tremendous amount of government funding. So I wanted to ask you a question. How many of you are helping your kids or grandkids with tuition payments? Could you just like raise your hands? Okay, thank you, thanks. I see a few hands. I asked this question at Century Village a couple of years ago, or 250 people in the room, and two thirds of the room raised their hands. It's a real serious issue. We all are aware that Jewish education is the future of our children and the future of the Jewish people. It's very expensive to send your kids to Jewish day school for the most part. And families are helping across the board, such as you. What we do with the Teach Coalition, which is to advocate for government funding, has brought in more than, I think, $600 million in the last 5 years to help our schools and to help our families. So I hate to imagine what the tuition would be without that money, but it's providing security guards, STEM teachers, nursing, transportation, like I said, scholarships, a lot of things that are very, very important to keep our schools going and to make them hopefully a little more affordable. You recognize the depth of this issue. But it boils down to, like, when we think about voting, we often think about the top of the ticket. This year it's the presidential election. But what's underneath, what we call the bottom part of the ticket, is really most important, because all politics are local. Just as we've talked about, all this funding that has been coming in and services has been through the state. Also, all our taxes, all our services are determined locally. They might be getting federal grants, they might be getting federal funding, but what's really happening and how that gets to you, it is determined locally. So that's why it's important to vote locally and vote for the candidates you believe will do a good job to protect your interests and to serve your interests. Our roads, our policing, our schools, our hospitals, just on every level, it's all determined on a local level. And that's why, it's a famous saying, all politics are local, but it really is critical. And that's why I know this is gonna be a big year to get out the vote, because everyone's passionate one way or the other on the presidential level, but those down ticket items that each of you have in your communities are gonna be critical to really determining what happens in your community. I want to go over to air. Hold on 1 second, I did that wrong. I wanna share screen. I just clicked the wrong button. So give me 1 minute, please. I apologize. I wanna share my document. So Judy and I did it perfectly a minute ago, and now I did it. Here we go. Okay, share screen.
Mimi, while you're figuring that out, which we will, it always gets complicated, I just want to comment that, in case anybody isn't aware, all of our programs are always recorded. If anyone wanted to record it privately, I don't mind, but you're going to all get a copy of the recording afterwards, so it's really not necessary. But just keep in mind that the programs are recorded. Thank you. And Mimi.
Okay, so I want to focus today on how to make your vote count. But I'll just say up front, if you have any questions, you'll see here on the bottom of the screen my email. Please feel free to reach out to me if you want to be involved in any of our states and are getting out the vote efforts there. Reach out to me and I'll connect you to your local staff. I'm assuming that the over 50 age crowd tends to know these things. The younger people, this generation, I don't think have civic studies, so I'm not sure they do. But we'll just quickly review. Every 4 years, we have election for president. Some of your senators are up every, senator is up every 6 years. So in some of your states, you'll be having a Senate election, some you won't. The House is every 2 years. On a state level, usually in even years, there's elections. You see here in New Jersey and Virginia have off-year elections. Our governor elections are here in Florida are on the off year, the off even year. Municipal elections, they're occurring often together with other elections. Sometimes they're standalone. And sometimes those are the most important elections, these standalone, because cities and counties try to get in things that if people were paying attention, they wouldn't. So for example, here where I live in Hollywood, Florida, they had a election on some huge taxing issues and no one was paying attention and only the people who cared about it got out and a handful of people got out to try to oppose it. And they had, you know, I think we got $300 more taxes a year based on a 14% turnout at the polls. So this is a common strategy that you should be keeping your eye on in your areas. In the general election, it is determined, like we're having on November 3rd, which candidate will be elected to office. On the primary level, which most of us all have this past year, we had an election to determine who will represent a political party in the general election. So if you were Democrat, you chose your Democrat candidate. If you're Republican, you chose your Republican candidate. If you're non-party affiliated, you probably didn't get a chance to vote in the primary unless there were other municipal issues attached. There's a new concept, which if you're from California, you're familiar with this. There's something called open primary, where whether you're Democrat or Republican, in these open primaries, everybody runs under one, under, you know, I'm running for, just make it out the title, I'm running for mayor. There'll be eight people running, let's say, but you could be Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, whatever party you want to, whatever party you are. And then the top two candidates will compete in the general election. So you could end up having two Democrats running or two Republicans or, you know, a Democrat and Republican. You could have a Democrat and a working class party. You could have any combination. It's a new concept. I'm not so familiar with, you know, how it's really working out and what people think about it, but it is a new concept that you might be seeing more often. Okay, there's types of voting. So of course, our traditional vote. We get out to the poll on November 3rd or the first Tuesday of November in any presidential year. This is what's traditionally been most utilized. And this year will be the only, I don't know of any place that's not having in-person voting. I haven't heard yet, but because of COVID, but who knows what's gonna happen if there's a big increase in COVID somewhere. We have early voting. In many places, we have early voting, which means that there is a designated polling near somewhere near you, and you can vote starting usually a month before in advance. It's a really nice service because sometimes on election day, you just can't get to the poll. You're busy, you work, somebody's sick, things happen. So this way, you can always vote in advance, and it depends on each state, their rules, but I find it's a great service. Here in Florida, it's fascinating, but there's something here on Sunday, maybe two Sundays before the election, called Souls to the Polls. And this is when the Black churches, particularly in Miami, get together and they have their services on Sunday. And then they have the school buses come and take everybody to the polls to vote. I can't talk, I mean, I could talk, but I'm not going to talk about who they're told to vote for, how they're told to vote, which is something that we don't do. But then they all go back and have a picnic or a big dinner somewhere in the church or a picnic and out at the park. But it's a very famous thing, the News All report on the souls to the polls. And it's an interesting phenomenon. I'd love to hear if you have that in your community. Now, more and more people are voting by mail. We used to have just what's called absentee ballots because you were going to be out of the country or you were too sick to get to the polls or et cetera. But now, particularly because of COVID, this is getting utilized more and more and more. It's in Florida, it's in New Jersey, it's in New York. And in fact, on the next map, so you can look for your state, here we go. The blue states, everybody can vote by mail. The purple states, so on the blue states, you have to request a vote by mail ballot. So if that's something you want to do, if you really are sticking with staying at home, don't want to go to the polls, and you see the vast majority of the states are blue states that you can vote by mail, you should go online to your state election or your county election and find out how you vote by mail. If you're in Florida, you can go on the teachcoalition.org/Florida site, and we have a link to vote by mail registration. You can also, we will be having up on the teachcoalition.org site early next week, so that you can go at least from our states and register to vote by mail. But if not, it's real easy to go online and register to vote by mail. If you're in a purple state, which includes New Jersey and Vermont and all those western states that you can see, you're automatically going to be sent a vote by mail ballot. It's automatic. So what everyone in the post office is saying, and I know there's been a big brouhaha about the post office situation, but send it in early. Don't wait till the last day to send it in. If the election's November 3rd, I suggest, and the post office suggests, sending it in a week before to make sure that it's received. In Florida, I'm sure in many other states, you could also drop your ballot off at a vote by early voting location or even at the polling place the day of the election. There's a handful of states that do not, that you have to say that there's some reason besides the pandemic that you need to go to the polls. I just filled this out with my parents for them in Missouri, which did just now create a pandemic excuse. But the other reasons there were out of the country, infirm, can't leave the house. There's many other, you know, reasons you can use. But if you're in any of those states and you want to vote by mail, I suggest filling out that form right away. In the case of Missouri, if you were not saying COVID, you had to get it notarized. So I don't exactly know how people who can't leave their house get things notarized, but that was a requirement. So let's just review for some of our major Jewish states where I'm hoping you all are from. Florida, again, you can vote early at the poll and by mail. New Jersey, you can vote poll mail. New York, it's all three ways. And Pennsylvania has every way but the early voting. I do suggest if you plan to early vote, don't go on Sunday, because that's when everybody else is off of work, and that's when they go. And typically they're open during the week, and I've gone during the week, and it's just me and the polling people, and it's a much faster way of doing it. If you're not registered to vote, or you know people who aren't registered to vote, and you want to urge them to vote, since it's so important, every state has paper forms, and there's 38 states, including all of the teach states, besides New Jersey, where you can register to vote online. So again, you can come to our website early next week. Well, our new voting page will be up to help you register to vote or to share that information with people, or you can go to your local or state election site to learn how to do that. So I talked to you before about creating a voting block. So how do we do that? It's not hard, but it's not simple. There are right now many, many voter databases on a national or on a state level that companies collect all this public information data, which is available from every state, of who are the voters, what party they belong to, and how do they vote. Not who you vote for, but do you vote by mail? Do you vote by early election? By election. So we subscribe to one of these services in Florida, we use a different one in the other states, where you can actually type someone's name in and see that they voted in which election and how they voted. Again, no one has any idea how you voted. But what we do then is we take that information and we tag people so that we know that they are belong to one of our schools, or they ask to be on our mailing list, or they care about and they care about school choice, etc. So then we have this list of people who have opted in to receive our communications, so that we can then be in touch with them, and then we start our outreach. And this is the how we build a voting block. Now, we're all old enough to know that door knocking was a very popular way in the past to reach out to people, and then it kind of went out of favor. You know, candidates used to really go knock on everyone's door, or a surrogate or a supporter would go knock on a door and say, I'm for this person, or please vote for me, and let's talk about what issues you care about, et cetera. So it was that one-on-one relationship that is created that makes you care and want to, you know, feel connected to a person. And if you agree with them, him or her, then to vote for them. Door knocking kind of fell out of favor for a while with the advent of TV advertising and radio advertising and newspaper advertising and mailers. And that's like for a few election cycles, that's primarily how we got a lot of our information. But now that information has become fragmented, not everybody watches TV, not everybody watches the evening news, not everybody even had, we don't even have a TV. I mean, not people don't even have TVs anymore. Radio, you know, you could be driving your car, you might not listen to radio because you're listening to a podcast, or you're listening to Jewish music, or you're listening to the channel you love on Sirius. Because we have so many options to get information now, there's not a guarantee that there's going to be X number of eyes on a very expensive TV ad or a radio ad. So more and more, you're still going to see those things, but people aren't relying them anymore. When you heard about President Obama doing this grassroots campaign and asking people to give a dollar, I mean, he did a lot through the emailing and through door knocking and through people being out there talking to people. So that we are the Jewish community on a state level, and the TEACH, which is we're all the only people I know organizing on a state level, the Jewish community across the country. But we're engaging in some of these same strategies in order to reach you and to reach everybody. Door knocking, can't say we've done a lot of that, but we have had cases of people go out door knocking. But again, that is a very, very effective way of reaching somebody with your cause, with your candidate, et cetera. If we're out there, we're just saying, please get out to vote. Because now we can know through these databases, we can make a walking schedule and know that if we walk through a neighborhood in Teaneck, or we walk through a neighborhood in Hollywood, Florida, or in Brooklyn, you can actually know where your voters are, because you've ID'd your voters and you've tagged them. So you can create walk lists, you can create call lists, and reach out just to the people you want. And that's the advantage of this. The more capacity we have to collect data and use data, we have this capacity to reach everybody with a singular message, as opposed to these like TV advertising that you have no idea who's really watching, and you don't even know for sure if the person you want watching is watching the TV at that time. So now you can do all of these things. So door knocking is particularly effective. You know, we would know if we did this, you would know which house to knock on and which house not to knock on, or which person, you don't have to just go and look and see if they have a mezuzah, you already have it on your list. So then the next method is calling. And I don't know about you, but I know for me, in this last primary, I was overly texted, called, and emailed. It's effective, and that's what everyone is doing. So the on the calling, texting either by WhatsApp or by SMS, emailing, I would say, I don't know, I would love to hear from you after, you know, we can have a conversation when I finish this presentation, is that I signed up for everything because I want to see what everyone's doing. I must get at least 15 emails a day from the Democrats and 15 from the Republicans, just on the presidential level. And then probably another 10 or 15 for candidates running in states I know nothing about and have no relationship to. But because they're being supported heavily by the party, I'm getting a chance to give $1 to help somebody in Arizona win. So everyone is into this now, but it is a very, very effective way. And what makes it effective? It's not that it's not that some stranger is calling you hi, I'm Jane from wherever. I don't know Jane. But it's when we take our lists, divide them up among our activists and supporters, and they reach out to their friends and family. That's what makes this thing. It's called relational organizing. So it's one thing if they hear it from Teach Florida, be sure to get out to vote. Election is November 3rd. And they are invested in us. They care. They know we're doing great things in the community. They want to help. They want to make sure our Jewish voters are. We always say, elected officials listen when they know we're voting. So they know that, but it's real different if their friend is writing them. So this whole form of relational organizing, using the tools of calling, texting, emailing, is very, very effective. And what we've done, I'll just give you an example here in Florida again, is we have 150 activists who sign up and let us know, I'm going to reach out to these 10 people, or I'm going to reach out to these 10 people, or I'm going to reach out to these 120 people to make sure they get out to vote. In 2018, one young man took 120 of his friends and family, and he had a 90%, his people voted, 90% of his people voted, which is phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. I just did a primary and I took 20 people and I think 65% of my people voted. Maybe more because we don't get the final numbers. The election was 2 weeks ago and we don't get who voted in person that day until a month later. But in any case, it's a phenomenal way of getting out the vote. And this is what we're really investing in the coming month. 2 months is to get more and more of our people taking on their friends and families, or just saying, hey, send me 10 names of people in my community and I'll reach out to them and let me reach out to them. There's even apps now on your phone. There's one called Elector, which we've been working with, but there's many others where you can go on to the app and just highlight people from your phone book that you want to reach out to. And then the app uses this data again, telling you, yes, this person's registered to vote. No, they're not. They vote by mail. And then you can start texting or calling your friend with either canned messages that they have, or you can make your own message and say, hey, Sam, I noticed, you didn't get to the poll yet. Hope you get out. It really, really makes a big difference. And again, here in Florida, where I'm most familiar with the numbers, but in the race with Steve Miner, for example, the average turnout was 28%. But in our community, it was 60%. And the presidential election, the governor election in 2018, we had like a 72% turnout rate. We had a 300% increase in primary voting because it was the first time that we acted in the primary. And we in our community, we had a 300% turnout. In Teaneck recently, we got involved in an election and there was also a 65% turnout rate, which is just, especially in these smaller elections where you don't get such a big turnout, it's amazing. We're going to take a quick minute because I really want to leave time some connection. This goes into a little bit more information. As I said, you see here, this is a sample map, a volunteer walking map. The question, we give a script to the people with questions. It's never, who are you voting for? It's never like that. It's just like, are you planning to vote? When, how are you planning to vote? Etc. You see in suburbia, if you look at the bottom point, suburban averages 15 doors per hour, 4 contacts per hour. So the one time I did this, I went down to South Miami to not my own neighborhood to see how it, just to test it out. It was a Sunday morning, so we actually had more than 4 contacts per hour, but we did it was not a lot more. It's hard work. It's really hard work. And in fact, instead of giving us a walking list, they had gave us a driving list because it was just going to be easier to drive. Phone banking. There's phone banking by having a bunch of people come in and make phone calls, which is phenomenal. There's also auto phone banks, which I'm sure you receive these robocalls about voting. If you can read that script, but it says, hi, this is done for a student. My name is so-and-so at Hebrew Academy. Is this so? I'm calling to ask if you're planning to vote. We receive $900,000 a year in state scholarship programs. Voting shows elected officials that we care. Can we count on you to vote? Yes, no, maybe. Would you like information about early voting? Yes, and then we could give them the information on the phone and also follow up with an email. So it's a great way of getting out. It's not always easy to get people who want a phone bank, but it's a great service. We're not so fond of these robocalls because they're very annoying and people don't seem to like them. There's two kinds of texting, what we call bulk testing, where you can create a message that automatically gets sent out to a list that you create. It costs 2 to 5 cents a text. And then you can also do it through, have volunteers sending the text through this robo, through this automatic system instead of just to their friends. But they have to send it out person by person. As you see here, it says charities and political campaigns are exempt from FCC regulations requiring an opt-in. So you can text any phone call number you have. It is what it is. It's kind of annoying, I know, but it is what the law allows at the moment. I'm not sure how long that will last. If you know, same way that you can block phone calls, I assume at some point we're going to have the ability to block text or opt out. The peer-to-peer, again, this was just a sample. I realize it's kind of small, but you send a message, the person writes back, and then you can keep writing back and forth. And it's a great method. Though I will tell you, recently when I got something that was very annoying and I wrote the person back and said, can you please take me off your list? He claimed to be a volunteer who had no power whatsoever. Whenever we do this, if someone says, please take me off your list, the answer, whoever's doing it, is automatically, of course. Email. This is, I'm talking to a sophisticated group. So in any given list of email people, you can segment it. Who's in, as you see here, again, for Florida, who's in Hollywood, who signed our petition, who's in North Miami Beach, who's in Boca, who's in Miami Beach, so that we can target mail those people. Not everyone's going to be having a municipal election, let's say in a given election cycle. So we would be sending, hey, you're in Miami Beach, you have a big election coming up, et cetera. And then you pay attention to your open rates. That's really important. This is a sample we had in the general election GOTV email. We had 28% open rate, 32%. That's an open rate language. That's very high rate. Typically, when you're getting all these emails from companies or these mass emails for different things, you're getting maybe a 5% open rate. So we're getting a good open rate because people are connected to us because it's an issue of their day schools, and Jewish education is an important issue to them. This is that comment again about relational organizing, which uses all those tools of phone calling and texting. You would go in, you could either just do it yourself on WhatsApp to your friends, or you could use one of these apps. And if you want to know more, I'm happy to share that information with you if you contact me. But relational organizing, to leverage your existing family and friend relationships. So on the left-hand side, this is from one of the apps. You can go in the app and just highlight who you want to connect to. And then if you press on that, those little three dots, it'll tell you, you can add them as a supporter, which it's not as financial. It's just saying somebody your relationship with. You can reach them by WhatsApp. You can call them. You can SMS them. And then you get rated. How are you doing? The more stories you get, it's called gamification. It makes it fun. How many points did I get by signing up these people? So that's how it works. And it will tell you, you completed 1 out of 15 calls so far. So you can kind of track your own progress and see what's going on. This is just one of the many sites that exist, but it's a very powerful tool. It makes it really easy to get your friends and family out to vote. So I'm going to unshare and see all your beautiful faces again. I want to say that this is a pivotal election, not just for the president, which is a huge issue. It's for Congress, it's for Senate, across the board. And not everyone has an election, but where you do, it's a very critical election. But on a local level, your local legislatures are all running, your local congresspeople are all running. And if you care and want to get involved and make a difference, you're welcome to join us to help get out the vote on your areas if we're active in your area, or you can do it on your own, just to say, hey, I've taken this on to get 10 of my friends to vote, or 10 of my family members to vote, or 100, and we'll help give you those tools, or you can just go online and see which tools are available. It's making a difference. That's the most important part. There's AIPAC working on a national level, but no one else is working on state levels where it really counts and where the funding comes from, except right now for Teach Florida, Teach Coalition across the board in all of our states. It's something that we hope the community can go out for. And we're starting with the critical issue of Jewish education. There's many other issues out there. And Judy knows that it's a dream I have to try to see what else we can do, particularly for mature adults. I'm a member of the Sandwich Generation, and my mom, she's 90, so I have it pretty easy. I didn't have to do this till now, but she had a stroke, and I've now been thrown into the land of advocating for my mom to get the services she needs, and I'm sure many of you have had to do that for your own parents, or for just sick members, or for your love, for someone in your family, or a good friend, and there's a lot that our elected officials could help us with too, or just our advocacy skills, learning how to create good relationships with elected officials can help in those areas as well. So I'd like to conclude now and take a couple questions or have a discussion.
Okay, Mimi, thank you so much for really getting us, invigorated, and I'm sure everybody here, I'm sure before this presentation, everyone was going to vote, but now everybody can talk to their children and their grandchildren and get them to vote too, because that probably is an issue. Okay, a couple of comments and questions. First of all, there was a question. Could you please explain to people, they don't know what a teach state is?
Oh, I'm so sorry. It's like if you ever talk to someone, you throw in Hebrew and you realize they're not Jewish and they have no idea what you're saying. I'm sorry, I just did that. The OU, in recognition of this, what we call the tuition crisis, we started an organization called Teach Coalition. We're now active in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Florida, and we're hoping to open soon in California. This is where we've started, and this is where these activities are taking place. The tremendous government funding that is starting to come in, the strong relationship building with elected officials, and now a bigger emphasis on getting out the vote to make sure that our issues are priority issues with elected officials.
Okay. Somebody asked, we hear so much about the insecurity of voting by mail. What is your opinion? Is that a safe way to vote? And this person actually is in Florida.
Okay. I think In Florida, we've had a great track record. And this last primary was phenomenal. It was the first time we didn't have problems in Broward County, and Palm Beach County, which have become kind of national go-to make fun of Florida places. But the elections went smoothly and very well, and the mail-in ballots went in very well. There was recently an issue in New Jersey, and there's actually accusations and maybe even a lawsuit about fraud. But I believe that overall it's a safe system. And, there's always ways to game the system. And then, if you remember good old Mayor Daley, who used to, have dead people vote. I mean, there's always ways to game the system, but I think it's a fairly reliable way. And I think in the case of people who are not wanting to go out into public and vote, it's kind of your only option. So I think you shouldn't be worried. But just be sure, I'll tell you one thing, read the directions. You have to sign your name a certain way. You have to put in the ballot a certain way. It's not complicated, but just read the directions and follow them.
Okay. Somebody actually from California wanted people to, they said there are some official drop boxes that are picked up by the poll workers. And this person says that in California, you don't need a notary, but you need the voter to sign who is dropping off the ballot in person. I think the idea would be is everybody should check locally what all the laws and rules of their state are, you know, prior to that. I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, thank you for that information. I do have someone on our staff who knows a lot more about some of the specifics in each state. So if you do, please take my email, mimij@ou.org, and feel free to reach out to me, and I'll connect you with the information you need, or our team if you're in one of our states.
Somebody wants you to comment about the program you had said about the Souls to the Polls. Do you think this is something that we should be doing, you know, in our communities?
Oh my God, such a great question. So we actually tried this, but it was so last minute. But before the governor election in 2018, three of us went out and spoke in three different synagogues, and somebody paid for buses to take people to the polls. But it was done very last minute. I was in Century Village in Deerfield Beach, and about 12 people got on the bus, which is pretty cool. But we had less numbers in the other two communities. It's a great idea. It requires a lot of work on organizational work, but I think it's a phenomenal idea. And I, you know, whoever asked the question, if you want to talk about how we could organize it, it involves, there's a little shift in mentality I found. There were some rabbis who just didn't want to touch anything remotely politically, even though this is just get out to vote and it's not a political action. But they were concerned. So there's a lot of education that needs to go on, but I do think it's a phenomenal idea and I love it.
Okay. Somebody wants to know, how are call lists to get out the vote? How are they created?
Again, what we have to do is buy a database. So here in Florida, we have a database called WebElect, and it's expensive. So we only buy it for the districts where we have Jewish people, because in Florida, we're pretty, believe it or not, even though there's a lot of us, you know, a lot of Orthodox and traditional Jews, we tend to be very lumped into a handful of districts. So we buy the data for that area, and then we tag our supporters and our members, and that's our call list. That is our call list. In New York and New Jersey, where things are a little bit more spread out, we're not going to be doing that level of calling yet, except in two select districts. We're going to really handpick districts and start to model it in these areas. But otherwise, when a big campaign is doing a call list, they're also, if they're Democrats, it's amazing. If I could tell you what is in some of these databases. Our voter database is just a voter database, but there's voter databases called L2 or I360, and they have so much consumer data, it's really scary. I was alarmed to know how much they know about me or you or anybody, and how you can research. So when somebody's running for office, their team will know what data points they're looking for. So they're not gonna call, let's say they won't call me because I send my kids to private school, but they're going to call the 25 people on my block who send their kids to public school. They have the information down to that point, or who have American Express credit card versus a debit card. They subscribe to this magazine or that magazine, or they flew 20 times this year as opposed to 5 times for the other person. They have incredible amount of data, and they mine these databases and call the people that they think are most favorable to vote for them. It's this general put out a TV ad and hope somebody gets excited about you. It's done. It's not effective. It's this really refined finding the people that are going to vote for us and making sure they get to the polls is the strategy that everybody is using right now.
Okay, last question, and I think this affects probably a lot of people in our group, is that somebody was saying that they're registered for a party in one place, but yet they are located right now in another place, and they're getting surveys from the place where they would not be voting. They want to know, can they answer them if they're registered to vote in another district or place?
There's nothing wrong with answering a survey because you're not you know, as long as you vote legally, there's nothing wrong with answering a survey at all. I'm curious how they got your name, but as I said before, maybe you live in a community and somebody, or you belong to a shul and somehow they got the list of the shul. So I am kind of curious how they got your name if you're only in a temporary spot. But it doesn't matter if you answer any surveys. Go ahead, go for it. It's just as long as you vote legally. Okay. So that's one thing I want to say. If, for example, you move to Florida, I know a lot of people who say, oh, but I still vote in New Jersey or I still vote in New York. The fact of the matter is your vote counts in Florida much more than it does in some of these other places where you know there's going to always be a Democrat this or a Republican that. If you move and you want to be part of where you live and make a difference, I really do suggest that you move your registration to your new place. And it's the responsibility of the new place you register. They ask for your old address and they're supposed to be notifying the people where you came from that you're now a voter in wherever and you're no longer voting in your old home.
Okay, well, I think that's all of our questions. We want to thank everyone and thank Mimi again for what a wonderful presentation. Just to get a few announcements. So looking ahead to next week, we have on Tuesday with Nefesh B'Nefesh again, part two of the program that we started a few weeks ago, Beyond the Aliyah Process, Building Your Life in Israel. And we will have that presentation on Tuesday. On Thursday, we are very, very, very lucky to have Rabbi Dr. Aaron Glott, who is really on the front lines of COVID. He is the chief of infectious diseases and he's the hospital epidemiologist at Mount Sinai South Nassau. In addition to being a rabbi at both an assistant rabbi at Young Israel of Woodmere and also an associate rabbi at Congregation Anshei Chesed. So Rabbi Glott, I'm sure there are many people in this program right now that do like I do every Motzei Shabbos, is we log on right after Shabbos to be part of his COVID update, which is really affecting the Queens Nassau area. That one is, in fact, you know, he does a lot of programming for young people, for families. This one for next week will be specifically about our demographic. The registration you're getting, the form has a form that you can submit questions, but we must have them by Tuesday so that I can give it to him in advance. So now this morning an email went out and we apologize, things happen. That link didn't work, but right after that another email went out and I think it said corrected or updated. So use that one to register. Of course, you'll be getting other emails. So I think that's very, very important for all of us as we're getting ready for Yontif and trying to figure out, can we have our kids? Can we not? Are we going to shul? Are we not? He should have information and we will address as many questions as possible. I'm not going to promise that we're going to address all the questions, but as many as we can handle, we will do. But make sure again that your question is in by Tuesday at 5 p.m. because we're going to need to get the information to him ahead of time. I also want to comment. Every time I begin the program, of course, I say the same thing about introduction to spirit. And many of you, Kneiner, have been with us since the beginning. And you've heard me say this and probably could say it better than I can. The reason why I repeat it each time, and I just want to let everyone know, is that Kneiner Hara, this program is growing. Every single session, we have new people. We're gaining usually 50 to 100 per session. So that a program that started in March with 30 people watching it has now grown that our total participation is close to 3,000. And on a regular basis, every session has between 200 and 500 registrants. So we have a lot of new people and we want to make sure that everybody's welcome and understands what the program is about. So I do apologize for the repetition for so many of you, but it's for a good reason. And we are just happy to welcome everybody and hope that you attend one program and then come back for more and then tell all your friends about it. And thank any of the shuls that are partnering shuls for giving us that information. And of course, if your shul isn't listed, we're happy to have them join us as well. And all they have to do is give me a call. So that's about it for now. I want to wish everybody a good day. Have a good Shabbos. Be healthy and safe. We look forward to seeing you back on Tuesday. Again, thank you so much, Mimi.
Bye, everyone. Shabbat shalom.